So you may be familiar with the idea. It's found in Midrash. We're going to see some of the Midrashim that talk about it, that the Hebrew language is actually hardwired into the world, meaning that the world is created with Hebrew, that that Hebrew words have an association with the objects they describe beyond just like that's the name. But you've heard this before? This something? Okay. And we talk about it. It makes sense. We talk about Ba'asara Ma'amaros Nivra Ha'olam, right? The world is created with Hashem's 10 declarations, right? Which are really 9 Vayomers and then Bereishis counts. But if Hashem spoke to create the world, what was Hashem speaking? So the answer classically is, of course, it's Hebrew, right? This isn't new. But if you take a look on the sheet, and I wasn't sure how many to bring, but I brought a bunch. I brought some specific examples of this. What we're going to see is how this ties into Chukas and gives us a much bigger message about Judaism and the world. Okay, that's where I want to go with this. Take a look at the first source there. It's from Precious Bereishis. No.
Oh, no.
One sheet. Yeah.
So what happens when you RSVP last minute?
No, it's actually not. Because I wasn't taking the number of sheets. I just guessed.
It's fresh juice, ginger, lemon, apple.
I just had something so interesting that I just learned. Sorry that I'm speaking without being here the whole year. So the current, I did not know this, maybe all of you do, but the current Hebrew is not the Hebrew, the biblical Hebrew that they had. And the old letters, which I saw for the first time, actually look like what the letters mean.
Right.
Do you
so,
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like the Zion looks like a table because it means sustenance, and the old, not the Zion that we make, it's actually like a totally different alphabet.
Right.
Symbolic, more like...
Right, so
like
the Gemara talks about...
It looks like hieroglyphic, yeah. And it actually is symbolic for what the letter mm-hmm. and the word, like you're saying, actually is.
Right.
They didn't really read or speak, maybe, like for
I
some
think
people...
Always read.
No, it was always read, and the words were the same as they are.
Yes,
which is what you say, the font is different.
Right.
That's why I always explain it. Before I reached the point where font was an everyday word, I never knew how to explain this Gemara.
Right.
But once I saw, I thought, oh yeah, that's what they mean. The Gemara talks about how there was, at first, what's called Ksav Ivrit. And now, it's Ksav Ashurit. That's the difference. And the alphabet changed, and there's a lot of discussion about when exactly they changed. It's not straightforward. Ezra is often credited as the one who switches it over. But the old one, as you said, does not look, I mean, some of the letters are somewhat similar. It's not like it's completely off. I actually had a fellow in my shul in Pennsylvania who had for some reason he kept it in his sitter, a chart of the original letters and then Ksav Ashurit. And every once in a while it would come in handy. I don't know why he kept it in his sitter. But but it's true. The alphabet that we use is different. There's a lot of discussion about why it switched, what the reason for switching. There's even, if I remember correctly, the Samaritan Sifrei Torah have, I might be getting this wrong, Ksav Ashurit, except the Shem Hashem, the four-letter name of Hashem, is written in the old Ksav. It's either that or it's reversed. But there's a lot of discussion about this. One challenge that the Gemara mentions is that we've learned that the letters on the Luchos were written straight through, right? So you could read the Luchos, you know, either side, miraculously, but actually the letters go straight through. And then the Gemara says, Mem v'samach shebeluchos b'neis hayu omdin, that the final Mem, as well as the Samach, miraculously, the middle of the letter was just suspended in the air. The problem is that only works if it's Ksav Ashuris.
Right.
It doesn't work if it's Ksav Ivris. So there's a lot of discussion. Well, the Luchos were the new writing, and then it was there and it wasn't there. There's also a Gemara which talks about, I think around Shabbos, we actually mentioned it in the Rosh Shir, that says that Nevi'im are not allowed to create new things. And so then they talk about whether final letters were there originally. The idea that the Chaf, the Mem, the Nun, the Pei, and the Tzadi are different at the end of a word. Is that a new thing? Is that old and it was just forgotten and then the Nevi'im restored it? There's a lot of confusion surrounding this issue, but you know, I mean, if you ever held a shekel coin in Israel, it has the word shekel on it in the old letters.
Right.
The word shekel is on it in the old letters.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the Gemara talks about people who are separate from the world. They don't know what a coin looks like. So that's everybody's very pure. They don't know what coins look like. But yes, that's actually correct and quite confusing. So if you take a look at the first source, from the beginning of Bereshis, Vayitzev Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayas ha'sadeh ve'yizkol ha'vashamayim. Hashem creates the wild animals, Hashem creates the birds, Vayavel ha'adam l'ros ma'yikralo, and he brought to them to Adam to see what he would call them. This is when they're looking for an Ezer Kenegdo for Adam, and they can't find it. But v'chol asher yikralo ha'adam nefesh chayahu shema, whatever Adam calls it, that is its name. So take a look at the Medrash on that in source number 2. He'eviran lefnei Adam. Hashem passes the animals in front of Adam. Amar lo zeh ma'ashma. And Hashem says, what should this be called? Amar zeh shor. He says, oh, that's an ox. Well, no, he doesn't say an ox. He says, sure, that's the point. But he uses the Hebrew words that we use to name shor, chamor, sus, gamal. All of the Hebrew words, and Adam is the one who is assigning them their names. Now we're going to come back to that because there are two very different views. Rambam view and the Kuzari have very different views about what happened in that story. But I'm just bringing you that right now to show you the idea that these Hebrew names that we know are assumed to be original from the time of Bereshis. This, by the way, if you ever ask a linguist about this, you're going to get an earful. Because they don't believe this at all in any way, shape, or form. You just have to be cognizant of that. There's a whole other school of how language developed. If you take a look at source number 3, the Medrash in Bereshis Rabbah is an example of this. Lezos yikare isha ki me ish lukach azos. The Torah says when Chava is separated from Adam, she shall be called an ish because she an isha because she's taken from an ish. Says the Medrash. See that? Torah is given in Lashon HaKodesh, because otherwise the Isha from Ish doesn't make any sense. When you say she's called an Isha because she's taken from an Ish, that works if your words are Ish and Isha. That won't necessarily work in every other language. We're going to see Medrash on that a little bit later. And so we're then told, Kishem Shinitna Torah B'Lashon HaKodesh, Kach Nivra HaOlam B'Lashon HaKodesh. Just like Torah was given with Lashon HaKodesh, so too the world was created with it. One more piece along the same lines before we see how this connects to the Parsha. Take a look at source number 4. This is the Gemara in Shabbos when they're talking about the laws of writing. And they digress into the letters of the alphabet and the symbolism of each of the letters of the alphabet. So I brought you an example here. Gimel Dalid, right? Hopefully we're familiar with those. So Gimel Dalid means, it's a message, Gimel Dalim. You should give to those who are impoverished. So it's a message. You get a little musr from the letters of the alphabet. Gimel Dalid is teaching you Gimel Dalim. My time of pshuta kare de Gimel agabe Dalid. And that's the part that I quoted it for. Why is it that the back letter of the Gimel extends towards the, I'm sorry, not the back leg, the front leg of the gimel extends forward towards the Dalid, right? If you look at a gimel and Dalid, you see the gimel is kind of inclined forward. Shekein darko shel gomel chasadim larutz achar dalim. Because it is the way of somebody who performs chesed that they run after the person who is impoverished. In other words, the person should not say, well, if they want my help, let them send me a letter, call me, send me an email, you know, whatever it is. We're supposed to go looking for people who are in need in order to help them. Clear? Good? I mean, that message in and of itself, I think, is important. But the upshot of all of this, including these letters, which, again, these are Ksav Ashuri letters. These are not Ksav Ivri letters. The Gimel Dalet, you know, talking about the shape of the letter of, you know, the bottom of the Gimel. But they all are meant to highlight the idea that Hebrew is core to the world. Clear? Good? Wow, I feel like this version of the Shir is much quieter than it used to be. Okay. Take a look at source number 5. This brings us to Parshas Chukas. So this is the story of the Nachash Nechoshes. If you remember the basic story before, we see it in the Pesukim, the Jews reject the Man because that's just a habit in the Chumash. Hashem sends poisonous serpents to bite them. The nation admits their avera. They appeal to Moshe to daven on their behalf. And Hashem says, okay, Moshe, make a serpent and put it on the top of a pole. Right? And that's what he does. And they look up and they are healed. If you take a look at source number 5, Vayedibar Elohim b'Elokim u'b'Moshe, they challenge God and Moshe. Lamaha elisunu mimitzrayim lamus b'midbar. Why'd you take us out of Mitzrayim for us to die in the midbar? Ki ein lechem, there's no bread. Ve'ein mayim, there's no water. V'nafshenu katza b'alechem ha'kolokel, and we are so sick of this man. Vayishalach Hashem ba'am eis ha'nechashim ha'serafim. So Hashem sends nechashim serafim. I translate it as seraph serpents. Unclear what Saraf adds to Nachash, but it's actually understood, as we'll see, to be a different, you know, species or subspecies of snake. Vayinashku es ha'am, they bite the people. Vayomas amrav mi Yisrael, and a lot of Jews are dying. Vayaval ha'am el Moshe, vayimru chatanu, when they come to Moshe and they say, guess we should have known, right? We read the last few parashiyos. We should have known what was going to happen. Ki dibarinu v'Hashem v'avach, we spoke against you, we spoke against God. His palel Hashem v'yaser me'aleinu as ha'nachash, daven to Hashem, have Hashem get rid of the nachash, v'yispala Moshe bad ha'am, Moshe davens, and v'yom Hashem Moshe, say lecha saraf. So Hashem says, make a saraf, v'sim oso al neis, and put it up on a pole. V'yakol ha'nashuch v'ra'os ovachai, anybody sees it, they'll live. Vayas Moshe Nachash Nachoshes Vaisimei Walanes. He makes this out of copper. He puts it up on the pole. Vayam Nashach Nachoshes Ish Vibit El Nachash Nachoshes Vachai. And if the snake bit somebody, say he would look at the Nachash Nachoshes and he would live. That's the story. Incidentally, because people, you know, make this mistake sometimes. Bless you. This is not the origin of the Caduceus. Right? If you're familiar with the caduceus, the medical symbol with the snake on the pole. You're always inclined to think, well, that must be from here. But it's actually, there are a lot of different cultures that have, weirdly, medical images of a snake on a pole. And the origin of medical societies using it is a Greek that's associated with one of the Greek gods. That isn't to say that this isn't the original, but it's not what they think of. When they do it, they're not thinking Bible. Sorry?
But maybe the Greeks thought it was, you know.
Yeah, I have no way to know at all. The mission in Rosh Hashanah, of course, says it has nothing to do with the serpent, right? The mission in Rosh Hashanah, talking about the shofar, talking about this, talking about the war with Amalek, says it's not about Moshe's hands in the war with Amalek. It's not about the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's not about the snake. It's you look up and you remember to dive into Hashem, and that's what heals you, right? It's not about the snake that's actually healing anybody. But there's one weird thing that happens, and there's a lot of weird things that happen in this story, fine. But one weird thing in particular in terms of what Moshe did. Because Moshe did something that Hashem didn't tell him to do here. What's the difference between what Hashem told Moshe to do and what he actually did? Yeah, you know.
Hashem said to make a saraf and he put nachash.
So, number one, Hashem says make a saraf, and he puts up a nachash, and again, we don't really know what the difference is yet. So unclear, but also he makes it out of Nechoshes. How does he know to make it out of Nechoshes? It didn't say anything about making it out of Nechoshes at all. Parenthetically, the meaning of Nechoshes, how do we translate Nechoshes?
Copper
is usually what people say. So it was definitely not copper. The copper does not exist on its own in nature. It's always alloyed with something else. Either it's alloyed with tin. Either it's alloyed with tin or it's alloyed with nickel. Those are the two ways that it's commonly found in nature. In one of them, it makes brass. In the other one, it makes bronze. So you'll see in some chumashim, when the word nechoshes shows up in the Torah, they'll actually translate it as brass or bronze because it's not pure copper. So whatever this was...
But it's, like
it's a copper alloy.
Is it nechash? It kind of sounds like nechash. Like,
indeed, it does. So that's where we're going to have to go. That's exactly what we're going to ask here. Is that why he's doing? Why he's making out of that? But there's nothing in the pasuk telling Moshe that he ought to do it. And in fact, the Medrash picks up on it. Lee, I don't know if you're remembering, but we actually learned this. This was how many years ago did we do Medrash on Tuesday afternoons?
My gosh, that was my first class with you.
Right.
And Noah.
So that's a long time ago. That's like 7 years ago. So the we learned about this then. It was before 2 years of Yeshaya. It was before 2 years of Daniel. It was before Ezra and Nehemiah, which I think also was 2 years. Yeah, no, it's a long time ago.
The, about 8 years ago.
So take a look at this medrash and it will look familiar to you then.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt it.
This is the this is the medrash on the making of the teva. Asei lecha tevas atzei gofer. They, I've really missed watching people puzzle over what exactly is in the
story. Can I explain anything? Can we take a pause? Does anyone want to know what
I mean, just know that it's going to be on the recording. That's all. So this thing, the pause doesn't always work, but we'll try. The medrash here, in context, is about making the teva. Asei lecha tevas atzei gofer. So Hashem says to Noah, make a boat. And he tells him, make it out of atzei gofer, which is gopher. Theoretically, we know what gopher wood is. Fine. The Amr of Isi, ba'arba mekomos namber b'lashon hazeh asei lecha. So Rabbi Isi says, there are four times in the Torah where Hashem says, asei lecha, make for yourself. The gimel nisparesh. And in three cases, it actually says what the material is you're supposed to use. Uvechad lo nisparesh. And not in one of them. Asei lecha tevas atzei gopher. So Rabbi Nassin says, yeah, in the kardunun, a boat of kardun wood. Like I said, if you know a gopher wood is, great. The Yehoshua asei lecha charvos tsurim. When Yehoshua has to do bris mila for the men who didn't get one in the midbar, Hashem says, make charvos, cherev, a blade, of tsurim, which is assumed here to be stone. I say assumed because it's actually a major machlokas on whether it was stone or whether it was metal. Because the Shulchan Aruch writes, it's a preference for bris mila to use a knife made of metal, even though other materials are fine. And one of the sources that it quotes is this passage of Asei lecha charvos tsurim. This is one of the sources that's brought. In any case, Asei lecha shtei chatzot zros kesef, make two trumpets of silver. So there it's explained, right? It's supposed to be of silver. And then you get our pasuk with the saraf and lonis farish. Doesn't say what you're supposed to use. The truth of the matter is that there are other asei lechas in Tanakh where it doesn't explain exactly what to make it from, but the Medrash doesn't bring them. There's one in Yechezkel, there's another one in Yirmiyahu, but I think those are different because those are cases where what the person is making is not something they're going to use. It's make something that's a prop for the Nevuah. So it's a different kind of asei lecha. As opposed to these, where it's make trumpets that you're going to use, make a boat you're going to live on, whatever it is, and you get instructions. And then you have our case.
Where it doesn't... also sort of a prop?
Yeah, I'm not so happy with that as a distinction. I haven't seen anyone who made a real distinction between the between them. But yeah, I was going to bring it on the sheet, but then I remembered we're not on Zoom, so therefore I need to make sure it really fits on, you know, like the one double-sided page. The see, there were advantages to Zoom, but not enough. So everyone looks at this question besides the Medrash and says, so how does Moshe know what to make it out of? He could have made it out of anything. So Ibn Ezra is, as always, hard-headed, and he says, take a look at number 7. He says, Asei lecha kidmus nachash saraf minachoshes kikein kasuv. He says, Hashem told him, make it out of copper. Because after all, the text says that Moshe made it out of copper. What do you think, that Moshe didn't do what Hashem told him to do? Obviously Moshe did what Hashem told him to do. By the way, if you read this week's Toronto Torah, there's a great article from Rav Baruch Weintraub, and the Parsha article is about how another time in this Parsha, Moshe does something that he's not supposed to do, it seems. The Jews approach Sichon, and Moshe sends a peace mission to Sichon saying, you know, we'll just go through your land, we'll buy food from you, or whatever, instead of fighting with him, even though he has been told to go fight with Sichon. So you have to read the article to find out, you know, how Moshe could do that. But Ibn Ezra assumes if Moshe made it of copper, the answer is Hashem told him to, and yeah, the Pasuk didn't say so. So that's one answer for it. Ramban gives you a different answer, which gives us a little bit of an inkling of something, the difference between Nachash and Saraf. If you take a look at number 8, he says, V'yadua, he says, it is known. And you always love it when Ramban says, it is known, because half the time it's something that he knows, but nobody else does. But all right, it is known. Ki anachashim ha-serafim adumei ha-einayim rochvei ha-rosh. He says, Nachashim HaSrafim have red eyes and wide heads. And he says, Shegufam Ke'en HaNachoshes B'Tzavaram, and their body is like the copper of their necks, meaning that they have a certain complexion to the snake, and it looks like Nachoshes. So Moshe has to make it out of Nachoshes, because it has to look like a Nachash Saraf. In other words, when Hashem says to make it look like a snake, one of those look like a snake characteristics is the color of the material, right? If someone said to you, make a, snakes aren't a great example because we're familiar with a pretty, you know, like a range of snakes. But if someone said to you, make a blueberry, right? And you made it out of red material or out of, you know, out of yellow material, you'd say, well, you didn't make a blueberry. You made something very artistic and very nice and making a statement about blueberries. I don't know. But it's not a blueberry. When Hashem says to Moshe, make a Nachash Saraf, Ramban says, that's what a Nachash Saraf looks like.
I just Googled it. There's a copperhead snake. I was thinking there's a snake that's called copper.
Yes, there are copperhead snakes. I don't know that they're Middle East. So you have to, that's what you need to look up. You have to find out where
it is.
But that's why Moshe chooses to do it. Because that's what snakes look like. Chizkuni gives you another answer. He says, if you want the snake to be visible to everybody from far away. So, if you want it to be visible from far away, it has to be made of a material that's going to shine in the sun. Mm-hmm. Copper will shine in the sun. So that's why it makes sense to use copper. I don't know that gold wouldn't have. You know, silver wouldn't have shone in the sun. But that's his answer. The truth is that there's a lot that makes sense about Ibn Ezra's approach, in the sense that it's not as though Hashem gives him any information in the Pasuk about what this is. Like, is it small? Is it big? I don't know. Is its mouth open? You can assume that whatever the nevuah was that Moshe had some kind of a picture of what he's supposed to make, and that includes making it out of Nechoshes. I think it's a logical assumption that Hashem has conveyed the instruction to Moshe. Nonetheless, Ramban's point is a fair point as well, which is if all the snakes they knew were, you know, looked like copper, then that was what he was going to use to make the snake. That also has a logic to it, right? Well, the Medrash goes in an entirely different direction.
I think that's an interesting point, because when Moshe got that as a nevuah, we don't know what he saw. So we can't assume that he went a step above and just went on his own and decided, okay, I'm just going to add this. Because we actually don't know what, in fact, he saw.
Right.
So it could have been an actual picture, and he's just copying Hashem. We just don't know.
Right. And I think that's... I think that fits well with either Ibn Ezra or Ramban, right? I think Ibn Ezra saying that, you know, there's more material than is conveyed in the Pasuk could well be because he saw a picture of it. Remember, we turn nevuah into speech. And with Moshe, that makes more sense than with others, because other Nevi'im, they get a picture of something and then they're supposed to put it into words. Whereas with Moshe, it's much more direct. But it's entirely possible that here it was just a picture, and therefore he knew to make it out of Nechoshes. But watch what the Medrash does.
So I'm just sorry to interrupt again. But so if you think that everyone's dying, and then Moshe starts forging a metal snake, and everyone's still dying while he's doing this?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this isn't a regular Magepa where you can just have Aaron put up Ketores. He's got, you know, he's got work to do. I understand why it's strange, but that seems to be the answer. He's a fast metal worker.
The fastest when they can work
it. Hand on hand,
right. Whatever, yeah. I actually was talking to somebody earlier this week who told me he had heard something, but I don't know his source, that he used copper from the mirrors that the women brought. But I thought that was all used for the kiyor. I think it's too late. You don't have that.
There's a lot of mirrors.
Yeah. Let's see the Medrash first.
Have an issue with the fact that he had to make this as opposed to doing something else to save the people? I mean, like, making this form, I feel like I don't want to say like avodah zarah because it's not, but I feel like in Judaism, making this thing that we're going to look up to that and that's going to save us is kind of a little bit against what he is, a direct messenger from Hashem. Why can't he hold up his arms, do something as the direct messenger, as opposed to having something, a third party, saving the people?
Right. So it's definitely a good point. I would say two things. First of all, to make the point stronger, remember that they kept this snake for centuries. It was finally destroyed by, anybody know?
Yeah.
Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu destroys the Nahash Nechoshes. We mentioned it in the Shir, but it wasn't in Yeshaya it's mentioned. It's in
about.
Right in Malachim / Divrei Hayamim. They talk about him destroying the serpent because people started to worship it, which you can understand. Frankly, it's a relic from Moshe.
Is that like the book of healing that they talk about?
So the Gemara in Brachos lists six things that Chizkiyahu did. Three of them the Chachamim agreed with, and three of them they did not agree with. And of those they agreed with, one of them was destroying the Sefer Refuos, and one of them is destroying the Nechash Mechoshes, and the other one was the way that he degraded his father's body on the way to burial, which is its own discussion. How we know about the Sefer Refuos is more tricky than the Nechash Mechoshes. Nechash Mechoshes is an explicit pasuk. The Sefer Refuos is trickier in terms of understanding how we know that he did it. That's its own discussion. But yes, it's from there. So number one, in terms of Nechama's point, yes, this is, you know, very much Avodah Zarah like, and in fact becomes a hazard. But in terms of Moshe bringing the Jews and making for them a physical item, this isn't the first time he's done that, right? What else did Moshe do with a physical item?
Luchos.
Right, Moshe has to make for them the second set of luchos. In last week's parsha, the Mateh of Aharon, right? Yeah. Which even you find in the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, there's a discussion about where this staff of Aharon was. Where did it come from? Originally, that was going to be my parsha shiur last Thursday, but I couldn't figure out a way to explain this Medrash, because the Medrash has three different views. One view is that it was Yehuda's Mateh, as in the one he gave to Tamar. Second view in the Medrash is that it's the one that all the Nisim were done with in Mitzrayim. And then the third view is that Moshe took a piece of wood and he splintered it into 12 pieces so that nobody should say this is a special matzah that Aharon had and that's why it flowered. So it's just like everybody else's. But in that version in the Medrash, Moshe is making the matzah as well. So this isn't the first time we've seen Moshe make physical things. It is interesting because you have the Medrash in Pekudei when Moshe puts up the Mishkan that says that Moshe has to be the one to put up the Mishkan because he was upset. He didn't have a role in the physical creation of anything else. He wanted a physical role along with everybody else. So there he didn't have one until then, and now suddenly he's got a bunch in Bamidbar. It's interesting. But yes.
But it does kind of make sense because it's like showing how Hashem has control of everything. The same thing that killed that is killing them can heal them. Like it's like a symmetry, you know, like a...
Right. And effectively, you could argue more than a symmetry. Professor Yechezkel Kaufman makes an interesting point in the story of Shimshon, that Shimshon's story employs what could be called mythological tropes, things that in the Greek world, let's say, would have been tools for, you know, promotion of mythology and Avodah Zarah. The idea that his hair is somehow magic. The seven locks of his hair that she cuts in, you know, in order to take away his strength. And Davka in the Psukim, it goes the other way. Because every time one of these emblems, images, is invoked, it's simultaneously identified as from Hashem. So when he loses his strength, it's because Hashem has left him. When he gains his strength back, it's because Hashem has come back to him. And it's meant Davka to defeat these types of ways to read those images. So to hear, you could argue, it's sending them a message that the snake bites and the snake heals, it's not about the snake. Which is a theme that we find elsewhere as well. So yes, it could definitely support that. The matzah was another example of that. The matzah is a tool of punishment and the matzah is also a tool of healing. So yes. So take a look at number 9, please. This is where the Medrash continues. Rabbi Yudin quotes Rabbi Avo. This is the Medrash. This is the continuation of source number 6, where they asked, hey, why is it that it doesn't say the material here? And Rabbi Yudin quotes Rabbi Avo, quoting a pasuk in Mishlei. Yishma chacham v'yosef lekach. A wise person will listen and will take instruction. And he says, that's Moshe. Meaning Moshe figured out what to do. Shamar Kadosh Baruch Hu lo l'Moshe aseh lecha saraf v'lo pirish. Hashem said, make a saraf, and didn't tell him how. Amar, Moshe said, Imani osa oso shel zahav, ein halashon hazeh nofel halashon zeh. He says, if I make it out of gold, the language doesn't really flow. Shakesef ein halashon hazeh nofel halashon zeh. If I make it out of silver also, it's not going to flow. Ela harayani osa oso shel nechoshes. I'm going to make it out of nechoshes. Lashon nofel halashon. So that language flows into language. In other words, it is a pun. Shenamar vayas Moshe nechash nechoshes. Conclusion of that thought, Mikan shenitna Torah b'lashon ha-kodesh. You see that the Torah was given with lashon ha-kodesh. This idea that Moshe understands what Hashem wants because of the pun actually has a word for it. The word is paranomasia. The paranomasia means playing with words or sounds, and it is found a lot in Tanakh. There are puns all over Tanakh. Paranomasia. Yeah. That's the word. P-A-R-O-N-O-M... I just have it in my thing here. Just read it. Different. P-A-R-O-N-O-M-A-S-I-A. Paranomasia.
M-A-S-I-A.
Yes, you can use that word, you know, anywhere.
So what does that mean? Impress people. Sounds, like,
it means the... It's basically playing with words and their sounds.
Yeah. That's sort of like back in the
matriarchs with numbers. Minute.
Just in a sense. In a sense.
She made that fashion story.
So this happens all over Tanakh. We find puns mm-hmm. everywhere in Tanakh. I'm gonna start on examples.
Right?
Like Yeshaya loves it. Yeah. Yeshaya does it all over the place. But it's not only Yeshaya, it comes up everywhere. But even here, the use of the word nachash is itself a pun. Because nachash doesn't only mean snake. What else does nachash mean?
Suspicious?
Divine?
Okay. Closer. Secret information. Right? So it lo sinachashu is don't try to determine secret information. Yosef says when they take his goblet, right? Don't you know? Ki nachesh yinachesh ish asher kamoni. I'm going to have access to secret information. So the...
But this was never said at the time, right? We were reading it and it flows, but no one
what
said
nachash
nechoshes.
No one said it in that moment in time, but Hashem gives us the text, right? As you know, the Gemara has this discussion about whether Hashem gives us the entire Chumash in one edition, or whether it's Megillah Nitneis. As we go through the Midbar, we get new scrolls as new things are taught and new events take place. Which I really like that, the idea that like sort of something happens and then, you know, Hashem hands Moshe, you know, here's more now for your Torah. So this last part of the Midrash, so by the way, Ramban asks the question that all of us should have asked immediately when we read that line in the Midrash, which is Hashem didn't say to make a nachash. Hashem said to make a saraf. Saraf nechoshes doesn't work. Nachash nechoshes works. So Ramban has a way to deal with it. Don't get hung up on it. But then the last...
Did anyone say it was like an angel? Like a saraf?
No. I have not seen that suggested. The question is, what are serafim? When serafim show up in the Navi, you know, what is a saraf is a really good question. If you do Yeshaya Perek Vav, like you'll see, they talk about there what is a saraf. So
that's what Hashem said to make, just a saraf, and
yeah.
Moshe made a snake.
Yeah. So the key part here that brings us back to the beginning is the Midrash acknowledging the pun and saying the Torah was given and the world was created with Lashon HaKodesh. So the question now here that we have to deal with is, what does that mean? In the context of the Midrash, what it's trying to tell us is that the association between a serpent and copper alloy is fundamental to their natures. It's expressed in the Torah's Hebrew words for both of them, meaning they both have the word nahash in them because there is a link between them. And the connection between the two is foreordained. It's there from the beginning. And the Medrash concludes in source number 10. This is a Medrash which is somewhat problematic, but we'll read it. Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Chizkiah, quote Rabbi Simon, K'shem she'nitna Torah b'lashon HaKodesh, kach ha'olam nivra b'lashon HaKodesh. Just like the Torah was given with Lashon HaKodesh, so too the world was created with Lashon HaKodesh. And he says, Shamatim b'yamecha, have you ever heard people say, and then they give you different words that are used for human being in different languages. Gini, ginaya, anthropi, anthropaya, gavra, gavrata. Ela ish v'isha, he says, in other languages you don't see that the word for the male and the word for the female are so similar. Only ish and isha. Yeah, except for male and female, except for man and woman, except for Nino and Nina. Like, yeah,
exactly.
Fine. They, like I said, they, just so you know, on the Medrash, the terms that they use here, the first one, Gini, Ginia, that's Greek. Anthropos is also Greek, and then Gaber is actually Middle Iranian. At least when I looked it up when I first learned this Medrash.
It sounds like Gemara.
Oh, yeah. No, because Aramaic is very similar to it, and Aramaic does do it. But Aramaic is a sister language of Hebrew. That's not so surprising. I mean, you'll find it, you know, in any language it's going to be Hebrew-related. I mean, as I said to you in the beginning, linguists will not accept anything that we're saying here. There's a whole other school of linguistic development, Indo-European languages, Semitic languages. It's a whole other discussion. They're not going to accept any of this. But the question out of all of this is, so what? What's the implication of saying the world was created with this, that these words are, you know, Hebrew words are tied into the item? So the truth of the matter is that the Rambam doesn't seem to buy any of this. Which, if I said to you there was a Rishon who didn't buy any of this, it was going to be the Rambam. If you take a look at source number 11 from the Moreh Nevuchim, he says, Mimash etzach shetedo'ehu, what you need to know, v'tis orer alav, and you have to be alert to this, Amro vayikraha Adam shemos, when the text says, Adam called names, like we read in the beginning, lavmadu shalashonos heskemios lotivios, that teaches that language is by convention. People decide what to call something, that's what it is called. And that it's not natural, there is no natural word. You know, Gamal is not the built-in name for a camel. It's just the word that we decided we're going to use. Rambam, very straightforward. On the other hand, the Kuzari. V'chol asher yikra lo ha'adam nefesh chayahu shemo, rotza lomar, shehu ra'ui l'shem ha'hu. It teaches that the creature was suited for that name. V'na'os lo, the name is appropriate for it. U'malameid al tiv'o, and teaches of its nature. That's part of the way the Kuzari looks at Hebrew altogether. The Kuzari has long discussion, which you have to really be like a serious grammar person to follow, about how Hebrew is an elevated language. Part of his issues with Islamic culture of his day, because they said Arabic was an elevated language. You know, the same way that we say you can't really translate Torah. So they're very serious. They say you're not allowed to translate the Quran. Like, translating the Quran, like, it's a death penalty, translating out of Arabic, unless you have the approved, you know, translation. They're very, very serious about
that.
We
say you can't translate Torah?
Yes.
Okay, we do,
because it was an eis lasos. It was a time of need, because of people's inability to learn, and it was either that or lose Torah. But it wasn't straightforward at all. You have the Medrash that talks about the 3 days of darkness, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of Teves. So we're familiar with the 10th of Teves. What happens on the 8th and 9th? So Targum Shivim is the 8th of Teves, the translation of the Torah into Greek. And in one version in the Midrashim, that is viewed as a very dark day for Klal Yisrael. And then the other one is supposed to be Ezra's Yahrzeit. That's a whole other discussion. But
So Arabs don't have that at all? Like, we, like she did with Beidon?
So they do have a translation of the Quran at this point, but how you get an authoritative translation is a whole parsha. That's a whole thing. They're very serious about it. So if you take a look at source number 13, you find him, part of the Kuzari, talking about the beauty of Hebrew versus Arabic. Amar HaKuzari, Hayesh Livrit Ma'ala Lashon Ha'arav. It's very ironic that I'm reading him as well as the Mor Nevuchim in the Hebrew text here, given that he wrote it in Arabic. Nonetheless, he says, does Hebrew have anything better than Arabic, says the king of the Kuzarim? Hiyoser Shlema Rechava Mimena V'anachnu Ro'am Et Zeh Be'inenu. It is more perfect, it is more broad, we see this with our own eyes. Meaning, he's saying that Arabic is a better language than Hebrew. So is saying the king of the Kuzarim. So Amar HaChaver, the Jew responds, Matza Osa Masha Matza Nos Eha. That which happened to the Jews, also the language they speak. Meaning we have become diminished, and so has our language. Nizdaldala Bedalusam Vitzara B'miutam. It has become impoverished when Jews became impoverished. It has become narrow as Jews have become narrow. V'hiba Atzma Chashuva Shebelashonos Mikabala Usvara. However, by tradition as well as logic, we know that it's actually the best of the languages. It's the greatest. So here you have the Kuzari insisting Hebrew is wonderful. And he will absolutely insist the world was created with Hebrew, and the Hebrew words relate to reality. Why is this idea so important to us? Why do we care? And the Rambam doesn't, but why do the rest of us care? Why is this a thing? So,
what is the Torah being written in a language, and that would have to be the best language?
Just because, well, it's the Torah's language, it must be.
From Hashem, given perfect. So, like, how would it be like, oh, there's actually more perfect language that reflects the world reality better? That would be very strange.
True. We would like to think that it must be the best, because otherwise, why would Hashem use it? I mean, you can sort of argue against if you wanted to, like the Midrash about Har Sinai, it's the lower mountain, it's not the highest mountain, Har Bayis isn't the highest mountain either, because, you know, you have to be humble. You could, in the event that someone argued Hebrew's not the best, you could find a way to make it work. But I think
also
it's
because they tell us, like, the world, like you're mentioning in those Midrashim in the beginning, that, like, when Hashem spoke, he spoke words that were created something. It wasn't like he said, make a table, and the table came.
Right.
So the Midrashim tell us that the words are actually the things.
Right. And you could just take the Midrashim, again, at face value, but I think the Midrashim themselves are getting at a bigger idea, which is that the reading the Torah plainly, without knowing any of this, I could have assumed that the Jews were the beneficiaries of a handful of superlative ancestors and amazing incidents. So if not for the daring of Avram and Sarah, they're willing to follow Lech Lecha, you know, we might have remained in Aram. If not for Avram having an Eved who is so pious and so loyal that he goes out and he gets the right wife from the family for Yitzchak, we would have been a one-generation wonder, and that would have been it. Right? I could read the Torah that way. Like, wow, amazing series of events resulted in the creation of Klal Yisrael. This Medrash argues that that's not the story. We're not a product of fortune. We're not a product of effort. The Jew is hardwired into the universe. Our language is the code used for creation. Our destiny is part of the plan from the beginning. You know, like you have the Midrashim that talk about how day six of creation is called Yom HaShishi, right? Because the world is waiting until the sixth of Sivan when we will receive the Torah, and then Hashem says, okay, you know, the world has achieved what it was supposed to achieve. Whether the Torah is given on the sixth of Sivan or the seventh of Sivan is its own discussion. But what we're saying is the plan was for us to be there from the beginning. And that's why our language is the language of creation. You follow?
But that doesn't mean that we have to have the best language. It doesn't have to, you don't need both.
Right, it doesn't need to be the best language.
Yeah.
That's true. It doesn't need to be the best according to that. It just has to be. We are tapped into that which Hashem used to create the world in the first place. Hashem was predicting us. And yes, then you could say, well, then it doesn't have to be the best. Mind you, the Kuzari says it is. So, you know, fine. But you're right. That no longer is the point. It's not the best. The point is that it's the original. It's what Hashem had in mind. Sof Maaseh Machshava Tchila. That's what Hashem had in mind from the very beginning. And this is a really important idea. It's a daunting idea, right? Because it demands a lot of us. It means that whatever I do next is not just my whim. It has to be something that feeds into Hashem's will. But it's also inspiring. Because it means that's one of the things I like about learning in person is that
control.
No, you can actually see things that you can't see on Zoom. The universe, crafted with our language, it's playing our song, right? It's speaking about us, so that when Moshe decides to create the Nachash of Nechoshet, it's teaching us not only that, Nachash Nechoshet, hey, that's a neat pun, it's teaching us that Hebrew is Hashem's tool, and that we, the speakers of Hebrew, are the Hashem's tool as well. That's what I draw from it. Goldie.
So, if Hebrew is Hashem's tool, why does he need Adam to name the animals, for example? Wouldn't the names already exist?
Right.
And he just know what they're called?
Yes. Well, that Adam would just know, not necessarily. Meaning Adam has to connect with it in some way in order to learn it. But yes, that's the idea. Unlike what the Rambam is saying, what the Kuzari would respond to the Rambam is, these are names which are inherent in the creatures, and Adam is having some level of Nevuah Ruach HaKodesh, whatever it means for Adam, in order to learn what those are. Because remember the context for that in the Chumash. It's when right before it says there's no Ezer Kenegdo for Adam. There's no match for him. Adam goes through all the animals in order to highlight the fact that he is different. He's not like them. So here's this, and this is this. Here's this, here's this. You're not like any of them. And it's meant to highlight that Adam is not like anybody else, and therefore needs to function at a different level. Hashem could have just said to Adam, you're different from everybody else. Go to sleep, and I'm going to, give you your own match. But Adam has to learn it. And that's what he's experiencing when he names them.
So it's not that he's creating those words. They're already there. He's just...
Correct. Again, unlike the Rambam, but yes. Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.